From simple daily tasks like unlocking our phones to more extensive crime investigations, our countenance has become a vital tool in countless aspects of society. The data collected from such facial technologies is extremely valuable for numerous reasons, such as analyzing consumer behavior and creating advertisements. However, with the immense growth of facial recognition softwares comes ethical and legal lines of concern. Large corporations often take advantage of such data to increase or maximize sales. Computerized algorithms can mistake individuals to be someone they are not. Governmental agencies can learn of your political alliances. With new and emerging technological advances in AI, we must better understand the roles and ethics of privacy to ensure personal security.
Welcome back to the Rethink podcast. This is the second part of our discussion with Professor Alexei Dingley. Last week we discussed data, how algorithms might highlight biases in our society, and the way Facebook is used. Stay tuned for more information at the end of the show. I mean, just to take it back slightly, when we say data, we're saying, for instance, your ethnicity, we're saying your age, we're saying your preferences.
It could be anything. If we go back to Facebook, for example, a very important data is how you use Facebook.
Okay.
So, I don't know, the likes or the links which you press, or how much time you actually spend gazing or looking at a photo.
Okay.
Even that is data. So anything is data, as long as it's measurable and we can collect it, it's data.
So that's the key phrase there. It has to be measurable for it to be data, of course. I mean, here's one of my questions. I mean, the thing is, we say that we're always talking about data and how Facebook uses it, but at the end of the day, like for the average Joe, for the average person on the street, how important is data, really? Like, how important is it to our identity? Like, just because I'm a Caucasian male between 25 to 30 and I like a number of pages, I spend X amount of time looking at a photo, is that really who I am? Is that really my identity?
Well, it's not your identity, but it's a reflection of you.
Okay.
And I think the issue is how these corporations use that data. It's not, the data doesn't define you as such. I mean, it shows attributes about you, but you're much more than your data, hopefully.
I would like to think so.
I don't know, David.
You know him better, so. but you know, the big issue is how to use that data. So first of all, listen, are you aware you're giving data? Do you give consent that you're giving that data? And then third, how are they using that data? I mean, let's not forget what happened a few years ago with, for example, Cambridge Analytica, no?
Mm-hmm.
All that
exactly.
Cambridge Analytica was collect your data, and then it used that data practically against you, okay? It tried to manipulate your thoughts. But over there, you can see the power of data and of these algorithms. I mean, a recent experiment, just by taking, you know, Facebook data, they managed to predict things like gender, race, sexual orientation, religion, political affiliation, even substance abuse, on an average of 80%.
Wow.
That's very high.
Yes.
I think that's very impressive, and like the accuracy that they have.
Yes, and this is, you know, this is Facebook, right? So Facebook probably knows you better than anyone else on this planet.
That's comforting.
Yes, but something even more scarier, a year or two ago, we did this experiment, which was a very small experiment, and practically wanted to understand sort of how many likes do you need for sites like Facebook to actually get to know you.
Okay.
And because, you know, some people tell us, oh no, but I don't use Facebook, I barely like things, you know, they like to play it cool. But when we did this experiment, we found out that with just 10 likes, we can predict with 80% accuracy. All right, now 10 likes is nothing. Okay.
I'm sorry, is it likes on anything?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So it could be someone's photo or
okay,
could be...
Okay, so that leads me to something else, all right?
Mm-hmm.
The power of prediction goes beyond what you like, all right?
Mm-hmm.
This is something which is real, actually. So they did this experiment and they found that, for example, people that like potato chips, which are curly whirly, you know, those round ones, mm-hmm. have higher IQ. So they can make these strange links. It doesn't mean that, you know, just because I like them, I have higher IQ.
One doesn't cause the
other.
It's
a correlation, not a cause of the
other. Exact.
Yeah.
But you know, they can make these strange links. So it might be, for example, imagine that I like, I don't know, a particular singer, okay? So probably from that singer, they can understand my political affiliation.
Okay, I can see that. I can see how, like, someone who would, for instance, is more into, like, for instance, the Beatles would be, I don't know, maybe have more left-wing views. I think I can see that connection.
But can you see it from the potato chips?
I mean, no.
No, that's not that. You know, these are micro patterns. And people do not see these micro patterns because they're too small. But the algorithm managed to see them. And that's the power of these algorithms. So.
Well, I mean, if these algorithms are so influential, shouldn't like companies reveal these algorithms? I mean, right now they're guarded as like a company secret. But like, if these algorithms can predict data to 80% accuracy, then why are they hidden? Why aren't they transparent? Why can't people go and see?
In reality, let's say the basis of these algorithms are available. I mean, they're nothing out of these.
Oh, okay.
If you take, I don't know, PageRank, which is the Google algorithm, it's public. I mean, of course, not the final version which they use, because there might be commercial secrets or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But the basic algorithm would be known. It's not that. But of course, then they would tweak it and add stuff to it, which of course they do not reveal for obvious reason.
Uh-huh. I mean, well.
Well, that's interesting. So basically, what you're saying is that a lot of this stuff is actually out there, but you're not accessing it. So why is that?
Well, I mean, I'm not accessing it. First of all, I had no idea it existed. And secondly, probably if I tried to access it, I would just see, like, it would look all Greek and hieroglyphics to me. Like, I'm imagining it's all, like, JavaScript or something.
In fact, even thanks to GDPR, people can request their data. So you can go, actually, to Facebook and ask Facebook to give you a copy of your data.
Wow.
Of course, it's not something you will understand, as we said. But you know, you have the right to request all your data. But if I may, it goes even beyond that, what we're talking, because there are different data which these algorithms harvest, of course. So there might be sort of the data which they collect through the interaction. So I pressed on a like, I pressed the link, my interaction with the system. So that's one kind of data. Secondly, there's the historic data. Remember, anything I do on these platforms is being recorded. So they keep that as well, and the algorithm keeps on learning, and we learn from other people's data and stuff. There's the profiling data, so each and every one of us, when we use this system, we're profiled and we're placed in particular pigeonholes, and that's how the algorithm decides what to show us and what not to show us. There's also some data which, you know, is hidden data, let's say. Just think about all the apps which you install on your phone. Mm-hmm. And they give you this page full of text about the rights and the
rights,
which everybody reads, yeah. Of course. Okay, and press OK. I don't know, the latest one, I think it was Google Maps, know that it's taking points, locations of where you've been.
Well, I saw that. I was honestly a bit freaked out. Like,
exactly. Most people don't know about that. So there's this hidden data collection, which one day you gave it permission to collect, which is being collected about you. So there's that thing. There's also third-party data. I mean, don't discard that. I mean, just think about Facebook. Facebook bought WhatsApp. No, so you know, they're using your chats on WhatsApp to, of course, change the content on your feed as well. So even if I'm speaking with my wife about a particular recipe, most probably when I go on Facebook, I'll see that recipe over there.
Yeah.
So it's being manipulation. Some people claim that there's also stolen data. I don't know if you've heard about the case about the virtual assistants.
No, go on.
So you know, people have these virtual assistants at home. They're small pods and stuff where you speak to them, Alexa or Siri and stuff. And some people are noticing that when you speak about a particular topic and then you go online, you find that the search engine or whatever starts showing you about that topic. So they're saying, how is the connection being made if I only spoke verbally? And some people are suspecting that these systems are actually harvesting our conversations as well. Even though, you know, this company never admitted that they did so, but it's quite strange that you're talking about a topic and all of a sudden you find it on your computer.
I've heard so many stories of that happening, in fact.
There was this one story where they're like, hey, Alexa, are you collecting my data? And it just turns off. I don't know if it's real or not, but it's quite something. I mean, but to jump back to this data point, to the point, well, other things about data, really, I guess. Should we be concerned that our data is being collected in such a way?
Well, I think we should question it, no? After all, it's our data, so it's, you know, private. It belongs to us. We're giving it to these corporations. We don't know how they're using it, or at least they're not very transparent about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, yes, we should be concerned, and people should be made much more aware about how their data is being used. I mean, there have been some cases which were quite bad. I mean, a few years back, Facebook launched their face recognition algorithm. So you know, I post a photo on Facebook, and all of a sudden, my face is tagged on that photo. And probably you've noticed, no? Because it tells you, this is your friend
XY.
Yeah. XY, yes. Yeah. Now, that caused an issue because when they originally launched it, it was auto-tagging. So when I upload a photo, it automatically tagged the people in that photo. Now it could be that, you know, we took a photo, but there's somebody in the background, and it automatically tagged that person as well. Now, of course, there's an issue of privacy. You imagine that person doesn't want to reveal that he was in that place in that particular time. Uh-huh. Now the algorithm is revealing that he's there. So you know, it goes beyond, and Facebook had lost a case about this, and the fact they turned it off now.
I mean, I'm really glad that you mentioned privacy, because this is the next point. So why do we need privacy? I mean, we talk a lot about data and how it's important for privacy, but when we think about it, do we actually need privacy so long as we can go home, lock our doors, and that, is that enough? Is that privacy for us? Or, why do we actually need it?
Well, it's about our life and our freedoms, no? And I think we should protect our freedoms. Okay. So privacy, I think it's a very important part of that freedom. I mean, I should have the right that, if I want to go somewhere, why should I be tracked by an algorithm or something? It's up to me, really. And I think, personally, I think privacy is something very sacred, and I think we should do our utmost to protect it.
I mean, you had mentioned, though, earlier, if it's a case of national security, then we should concede our right to privacy. Mm-hmm. Do you think there are other cases where, I don't know, besides national security, where we should shelf our privacy?
I think that there are two instances. I think one where sort of I'm going to harm myself, mm-hmm. and two where I'm going to harm someone else. Okay. I think those are the two. Basically, as a matter of principle, I think, human life is sacred, and I think we should do our utmost to protect it.
I would agree. I think something abstract like our data or our privacy should be secondary to mm-hmm. something tangible like a human's yes. life.
Well, it's not so abstract then in that case.
How so?
Well, your biological characteristics, mm-hmm. okay, so you are of the male sex, you have brown curly hair. I mean, this
brown
is
curly hair. Sorry.
And this is not abstract. These are facts. And then the question is it private in the sense that, because obviously I can see this right now. We're sitting here. I can make this observation, and mm-hmm. I can also then put these objective facts into my own head about you. But it's a question of privacy if Facebook is using those facts in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't see that as abstract. I think it's a question of. I think privacy, what we mean by privacy, can become a bit abstract.
I mean, here's my question, though. I mean, so the fact that, these biological truths, these biological facts, our hair color, our height, our age, our ethnicity, do we actually own that information? I mean...
Let's say it's an attribute which is helping to identify you. Mm-hmm. So the issue is not really whether you own it or not. You don't, mm-hmm. as you correctly said. But the issue is how she said, sort of how it is used.
Okay.
Because if it is used against you, then no. Now that's the problem. I mean, this is exactly what happened with Facebook Analytica. I mean, there were some elections. I believe it was in Kenya, somewhere there. And if they knew that I was pro a particular candidate, they were showing me adverts, sort of to reinforce my beliefs in favor of that candidate and against the other candidate. If I was pro another candidate, they were showing me stuff to put me off from voting. And that's how they managed to topple the election over there. So they were pushing people to go to vote if they were in favor, and pushing people not to vote if they were against the particular okay. candidate. So there, my attributes, because I declared my political affiliation and whatever, was being used against me, so that they can manipulate the system. And that's where the danger begins.
Okay, so if our data is used as as leverage, as to promote someone else's agenda, then that's where the issue starts.
That's what I think.
Okay.
Because remember, I mean, sharing of data is very important as well. I mean, if you take medical research, I mean, if it wasn't for the sharing of data, we wouldn't have reached advancements mm-hmm. as we have today.
True.
So you have to sort of be careful.
I mean, my question with this, let me go back to the biological truths for mm-hmm. a second. But people can actively see, I'm not trying to hide my data. So, for instance, let's say I'm walking down the street and people see, okay, there's this person with curly hair and, he's of a certain height and he's whatever. I can't really hide that.
Yes, it's
public data. Yes. So now... If you decide to use it and say, okay, people with curly hair usually buy my coffee, for instance, mm-hmm. and you come up to me and be like, oh, would you like to buy a coffee? And I say yes. In that case, did you use it against me? Did you con me or manipulate me into buying
coffee? But you're not being manipulated. That's the difference. Because if I show you an advert, it's okay, no? But if I show you an advert which is sort of changing your beliefs, then there is where the manipulation is happening.
Okay.
I was really surprised by the statistic in the Think article that compared EU citizens and Maltese citizens specifically in regards to sharing their data and being for or against facial recognition. So EU-wide, only 17% of people are in favor, but in Malta, it's 50%, which is huge. Do you have any thoughts on why that might be?
I think it's the lack of awareness and education. I mean, unfortunately, the way people sort of address their privacy or their lack of it, it's a reflection of our society. People never question, for example, the hundreds of CCTV cameras which are located all over the place. You know, you're being caught all the time with these cameras, but nobody questions them. If you see how people interact on Facebook, I mean, people just post stuff on Facebook, which is, you know, even some of them very personal stuff, which shouldn't be on Facebook. But you know, a lot of people were not taught or educated how to actually use these social media. You know, it just came upon us and people started using them with all the good and the bad. I like to say that there are two kinds of people. There are those people who think that, you know, just by posting something online, everybody saw it. And the other kind of people that think that by posting online, nobody is going to see it. I like to describe it like it's as if you have the facade of your home and you put a poster up there with your information. That's exactly what Facebook is. You know, some people will pass in front of your road and look at that information, others won't pass from your road. But you know, how many people will be ready to make a poster with that information in front of their house? Probably no one.
Because more effort involved.
But imagine if it was easy. Yes.
I think David would.
I think I would decorate my house with bright colors and paint unicorns all over it just so people can see it. Unfortunately, we need to bring this to a close. I have one final question so we can wrap up. So, the Guardian newspaper recently released an article that was written by an AI. I mean, it was edited, but it made some very interesting statements about robot rights, and it even displayed awareness about, like, that it had written previous articles that weren't accepted or were, like, slashed. So, with this in mind, what do you think the future might look like for AI and privacy in general?
Okay, so first of all, keep in mind that just because, you know, an AI wrote an article doesn't mean that the AI knows about the article. Okay, so it's just an algorithm putting text together and churning out something which is readable, let's say.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that the AI is aware about it and super happy that his article got published on The Guardian. Okay, so you know, there's the tissue of awareness, which is still very far away.
I mean, I'd say that about certain writers.
Okay. But I don't expect that to be resolved anytime soon, all right? Because, you know, it's something which we still do not understand. So we have no idea how humans become aware, why they become aware. Our consciousness, our thoughts, we're still very far away from that. And, you know, until we realize that, maybe we can simulate it, but it won't be the same thing. So I think it's very far away. But something which is maybe closer is the legal status. I think that is something which should happen, and we should discuss it. It was discussed in the Malta.ai strategy as well, the idea of giving legal personalities to AI as well. Because remember, today you might have algorithms that, for example, do trading for you. Okay, but you know, that's even virtual. You can have tangible algorithms as well. So think about self-driving car. All right, think about a car which is driving from Italy to France, and it's involved in an accident. So, you know, what are the rights and obligations over that car? It can't be considered just as an object, you know, a big boulder that fell from a mountain. It's not that. You know, it has rights and obligations, both towards itself, towards its passengers, and towards the people that have been affected. So there has to be some sort of legal persona for this sort of AI now, and I think we should be discussing these things as well. If you take it even further, you know, it can go even more. I mean, think about people that fall in love with AI. I mean, it might happen. And then, would we have rights, obligations towards that AI?
Can they become legally married, for example?
There are.
Sorry, this has already happened?
Yes, in Japan. Okay, there's a guy who legally married, one of them legally married an anime character, and the other one an AI as well. So
wow.
It happened, okay, so there's nothing out of this world.
You know, I hope they have a very happy marriage together, you know, like with his anime character and, you know.
Yes, she doesn't complain, the anime character.
I'm sure he doesn't complain either.
So you know, these things are coming up and we have to discuss them. Of course, you know, I don't have the answers for these things, I mean.
But you do have an article about it, one thing I've seen.
I do have as well.
How deep is your love?
How deep is your love as well, so you can read it as well.
Yes, we'll be linking to it as well. So, any final comments, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think it's a very exciting time. The world is changing. I'm sure it will change for the better. One thing to keep in mind is that, as I always say, AI is probably the most powerful tool ever created by men. And like any other tool, it depends now how we're going to use it. It can be used for bad things, but it can be used for a good thing. And if we use it for good, it can do really a lot of good.
Well, I mean, I think that sums it up very nicely. I mean, just be careful about what you post. You know, don't post about your chihuahuas excessively, Grandma. Thank you. And, you know, any other final comments, Nika?
This has been really fascinating, and I'm thinking a lot now about how we increase awareness. So I guess that's another challenge that we really have to tackle, especially in Malta.
Well, and on that very interesting note, thank you very much, and have a nice day.
Thank you for joining us for this two-part episode. If you want to hear the full unabridged version, you can find it on our website at www.um.edu.mt/think.
Our theme music is Kawaii Kitsune by Kevin McLeod, and the song in our music break was Mount Fuji by Timecrawler82.